Blog Talk Radio.
Some more interesting music.
I am flesh and I am bone. Rise up, ding, ding, like glitter and gold. I got fire in my soul. Rise up, ding, ding, like glitter.
This is Jane, and we have Don on the line. Tonight's topic is counting the ballots accurately in key states. Let's do it fairly. So there is a key official from the Nevada Election Board that's going to explain something, and I'm going to do a quick overview before he gets on the air. Their tabulation software yesterday miscounted 120,000 votes. Right now it's Biden 604251, 604,002, and he is ahead of Donald Trump right now. Provisional ballots are going to be counted. Nevada has 17 separate databases for each county, and they have to detect and weed out their provisional ballots. And what I mean by that is they have to make sure that the same people who mailed in ballots didn't walk in, too. From November 6th, which is tomorrow, till the 10th, they are able to receive postmarked mail-in ballots and see if the signatures match, which is called curing the ballot, and they have that till November 12th to receive all November 3rd. They will count the bulk of it through Saturday and Sunday, but like I said, they have to scan all the data received into another computer software, the mail versus the in-person, and they have one more week to do it. 1 minute while I play a short clip.
Additional ballots that are pending outside of what I just described. So I'm briefly going to go through those. The provisional ballots that were cast during the early voting and election day. The first announcement that I need to make is that the posting that was placed on our website on election night and yesterday was incorrect. We determined that our tabulation software was incorrectly duplicating those records, and so the 120,000 that you may have seen on our website is an incorrect number. That has been corrected. And the post that is out on our website now at www.clarkcountynv.gov/vote is correct. And those provisional ballots number a little over 60,000. We have to coordinate very closely with the Secretary of State. We are a bottom-up, not a top-down voter registration jurisdiction. And so all 17 counties need to send information to the Secretary because there's not one single database that we all draw from. We all have our own. And so in coordinating with the Secretary of State, we're awaiting instructions from them on when to send our provisional listing up to them, because we need to make absolutely certain that nobody who's casted a provisional ballot here in Clark County has done so in another county. So we're waiting instructions from them on when to send that report so we can make that verification. Staff is still currently working on all of those provisional ballots to make determinations as to whether the voter was eligible to cast that provisional ballot. That work will be ready once we notify the Secretary of State, and it is an automated process to pass those provisional ballots into the tabulation system. We have a group of voters who are ID required for one reason or another. The deadline for those voters to get back to us is Friday, November 6th at 5 p.m. So that is another group of ballots that we will need to put into the system once they have come in to provide their ID. The U.S. mail will continue to deliver. So starting tomorrow through next Tuesday, which is the last day for us to receive a mail ballot that's been postmarked November 3rd, we will continue to receive mail. So again, those ballots are also separate from what I previously reported. The cure process in Nevada, which is statutorily required for those voters who have been notified that they either did not sign their ballot or their signature did not match in our system. They have until Thursday, November 12th, to cure that ballot. The last day that we can tabulate and send ballots into the system is November 12th. So that night we will stay here.
So he did mention one thing I didn't, that some people have ID requirements, so maybe those are people who recently became naturalized citizens. And with that, I'm going to bring Don in. Don,
hello,
besides
there.
Albert,
hello,
I'm really
everybody.
Not sure who's calling in tonight, but what did you think of that clip I just played?
It was just replete with facts. There's That's exactly what it was. There was no opinion, subjective, objective, anything like that. It was just, it was objective.
He was just repeating what the whole myriad of Nevada state law allows up to November 12th.
Well, again, there you go with Nevada being at the forefront of the country. And that's why I live here. I live in Reno. But this is something that Clark County has to figure out. I don't know what exactly happened there, why those duplicate ballots were double-checked. But for the most part, they've got it taken care of, hopefully. And Barbara Sagefsky is our Secretary of State. She was the former ALEC West Coast leader or CEO, and the Koch brothers, Alec, and so she's being excoriated by Adam Laxalt, who is the Republican ex-attorney general and one of Trump's lackeys, for this mistake. And I'm just going to say it's a mistake right now. I don't know all the facts about our ballot counting in Clark County, but I do know here in Washoe, it's been very, very overseen. It's been micromanaged. We have, oh gosh, in the voting process, probably about three or four different fail safes. And now, today was my first day out as a ballot sure, if you want to call it that. I
yes, they mentioned the fact that, like, they had to match certain signatures against other ballots. I guess
correct.
They were afraid that some people mailed in ballots and voted in person. But my question
no.
is this. There were 17 counties, and they have to upload their vote counts to the main database.
Correct. And so those counties have nothing to do with Clark County. And originally this morning at 6 o'clock in the morning, they were accusing Clark County of some improprieties. But what this gentleman was talking about was the entire state compilation.
Right.
So, you know, those are two different things. And we, you know, just have to keep in mind about that. But we're trying to get this sorted out because we were one of the only states that allowed, if you will, mass mail-in voting, you know, capability.
Right, and Pennsylvania has 3 days after the election to count their votes, not as Nevada has all the way till next Friday, a week from tomorrow.
Well, no, they have the 12th. It's the 12th that every...
Is a week from tomorrow.
Okay. But anyway, so
Tomorrow's the 6th.
I'm losing the days, okay? I've been working so hard with the campaigns that I'm starting to lose what day it is. Believe me, I've worked every day for the last 2.5 weeks.
I know, and you've worked very hard, and we're not going to have that long of a show because it looks like Albert and Wade can't call in, and John's
okay.
at work. Now, since last night, Biden took, Biden took Virginia, and Trump is ahead still in Pennsylvania, but Georgia is less than a 2,000 mark gap. There's,
right.
Trump has 2,448,016, and Biden has 2,446,000. That's less than 1,500 to 1,700 vote difference.
And they still haven't finished yet. So they've got a couple of counties, DeKalb. And there's another one up north, Asos or something like that. But they've got a couple of counties that are basically Democratic counties, too, in Georgia. But, you know, we've got a couple of different places that still haven't finished their count. Arizona, if Arizona and Nevada go, of course, he won. And then if he can get Georgia and Nevada.
Georgia, they mentioned on NPR last night that Georgia had a lot of rural areas where they had to bring the votes in to get counted.
Right.
And that was, yeah.
Yeah, Georgia's still wide open. But, you know, the country is on pins and needles because some factions.
Trump's attitude, right?
Yeah, there are some factions that are expecting something to happen. And I don't see it. I'm in the streets every day, and I'm talking about in behind, you know, farmhouses and other places that are kind of seedy, if you will. And I don't see any evidence of anyone trying to organize any kind of thing, you know, anything, any happenstance. So, you know, negative happenstance. So I don't see any violence. I don't see anything going on. I see that there's a group of people that's still proud of the things that have happened in the last 4 years. And there may be a possibility of bringing the present candidate back for the next election. And that's just my opinion from what I've talked to some of the opposition, or the not the opposition, just Americans.
I think that Georgia is still not complete, and they also have a possible not one but two Senate runoffs.
The race for the White House. There's also a lot of drama going on.
Just a minute. I didn't mean to hit that. Just a second.
No,
hold on.
Go ahead.
I'm going to play this till I can turn how to shut it off.
Look at the screen. 49.9%. This is the first time that the incumbent David Perdue has dipped below 50%. Why does that matter? Because in Georgia, a candidate must have 50% in order to avoid a runoff. Right now,
automatic.
David Perdue does not have that. We are not.
So in Georgia, they were talking about two Senate races. One involved an appointed race. They might have another runoff next year. And that was an accidental play. I didn't mean to play it. We do have a special guest caller from the 909 area code. Let's see what they have to say. This is Jane and Don from Political Gravity. Would you like to make a few comments?
Hi, Jane. It's Suzette. Hi, Don.
Oh, hi, Suzette. How are you doing tonight?
Hi,
perfect
Dana.
Timing. I'm very excited you called. So, what do you say? I was 40 years old in 2000. None of this surprises me. How are you taking all of this in?
Well, just looking at it all, seeing what a mess our system is, to where there's just a lot of people that, you know, are, including myself, you know, are wondering why we can't trust our election systems. And it's not just this election, you know, it's other elections for the last, oh, I don't know, two decades or so. People aren't satisfied with the results. And it's unfortunate, you know. You know,
in the Gore v. Bush election, it was pretty crazy, but we had to wait 4 weeks, and it came down to 538 votes in Florida. And then
right.
The Supreme Court hijacked it from the Florida Supreme Court. So it's not mass mayhem yet, but do you think Donald Trump's attitude of trying to contest it already is non-productive?
Well, not really. I mean, as you were talking about, the 2000 election was contested between Bush and Gore. But people didn't go crazy at that point in time. People waited. People were upset as far as what's going on. But, you know, people weren't looting and, you know, tearing down businesses and, you know, trying to intimidate people. And as far as the whole voting thing, this is a totally different age that we live in today. And I just wish that
people are a lot more reliant on the internet.
Yes, and there's a lot of disinformation going around and, you know, also legitimate information. But because it just seems like there doesn't need to be all this big chaos. It's a contested election because there have been incidents that have been occurring at different states and different counties or cities, whatever it may be, and all that needs to be done, and it's good for both sides, I think, to have it looked at, to have it investigated, to see what's going on, to see if it is legit, you know, you know, as far as mistake, or maybe it was a human error, maybe somebody or a group or whoever decided, hey, go on both sides, decided to.
Yeah, I don't look at it that way. I feel like on an ideal level, each state is trying their best. And I just played a clip in Nevada. They have some voters that are required IDs, probably because they're naturalized citizens. They weren't born here. They have mail-in ballots. They have provisional ballots. Hold on, Don. I'm almost done. Then they have to measure if the mail-in ballots, if anyone walked in and voted twice. Well, the guy went through everything. What did I say wrong, Don?
They're not all about naturalized or unnaturalized citizens. It's about the signatures. There are a lot of either subjective signature takers, watchers, or the signature has changed so much, or in the case of mostly females, they've gotten married, changed their name, hyphenated, whatever. Some males in the same situation with the hyphenation. But those are the problems, major problems.
Well, they mentioned two problems in Nevada we're talking about, Suzette. Don lives there. They said that he said distinctly that certain voters need an ID requirement, and then in another sentence he mentioned that the signature on the ballot doesn't match the one in the database. But I do think that because of COVID, there's more mail-in ballots this year, and I just think it's taking longer. I don't know if there's intentional cheating going on.
Well,
as I said, we've been doing things very, very meticulously here.
He's right. At the time that I made the announcement, they mentioned as far as we have voters that need to come in. They know who they are with their voter or with their IDs that need to come in, and that's because, like he said,
right,
to make sure the signature matches from their driver's license to their voter card or voter ballot they need. So yeah, but as far as taking so long, yeah. I think it has a lot to do with mail-in ballots. I'm not saying it has to do with mail-in ballots because of fraud, but just the mail-in ballots in general. I mean, trying to gather them all together and making sure that the chain of command or chain of custody is followed, that process. And in many instances, or in some instances, I guess I should say, I don't want to say many, in some, they found out that there was no chain of custody, and so their boxes of ballots turning up. And some are for Biden and some are for Trump, as far as the box, the entire box, which is very bizarre that an entire box would just show up, significant amounts of ballots for one candidate or the other. So, it's hard to say, but I'm just waiting to find out.
Year I haven't been so charged up. I'm just waiting to see what happens. And I'm not sure what's going to happen, but I'll accept Trump if he wins, and I'll accept Biden if he wins. I didn't know it was going to be this close of a contest. I thought it would be like Trump 50%, Biden 45%. I didn't even think it was going to be a contest, and I'm a Democrat.
Yeah. Go ahead, Don.
Don, why
ahead.
Don't you tell Suzette what you've been doing the last 2 weeks?
Well, go ahead with your thought, and I'll try to tell her again because I already went through it once. Go ahead, Suzette. I'll say something about the Electoral College because, for the most part, I am an Electoral College person, but this is making me think that it might be better for a popular vote. I live in Nevada, so we, have 1/200 of power in our vote than, let's say, California or New York. But I have asked what the Electoral College is to protect us for that, states like us. But with the problems that we've had so far in this mandatory mail-in situation, where they allow it, there are too many, and with the post office, being, slower than it usually is, this has become a cluster. And I'm thinking maybe the popular vote may be the best. That's what I wanted to say. Go ahead.
But it's not going to happen this year.
To say that the mail-in ballots were because of the COVID. It's not going to be an every election cycle thing. It was mandated, again, so that people that felt that they were susceptible to the virus could still vote, but do it from their home and, you know, in the mail comfortably. But it wouldn't be an every cycle thing. And yes, they did cause a lot of issues, problems, distrust, and we're still counting them in a lot of states. And there were some states that did not do the mandatory, but the ones that did were having a lot of issues with the counts and the legitimacy of the ballot itself, in some cases being reported and shown why and what, you know, as far as the next level, which is the Supreme Court, because it goes through the states first. And then if nothing can be resolved there, then the Supreme Court. If the Supreme Court can't do anything, then it would be the Speaker of the House in the House.
Yeah, I don't want it to go to exponential levels. I would just like it to be solved. Like, why can't they just count and tally the votes and whoever wins, wins? I know that Trump's going to contest it at least in two states.
Well, the thing is, not everybody's like Duluth, Jane. You got all those honest people of good, you know, French, Norwegian stock, and they're going to, you know, meticulously look at every letter on every ballot. Then you've got places like Detroit, okay, and you
Detroit?
Saw what happened in Detroit. Yeah, Detroit had one of the biggest problems Tuesday of all the cities when a group of people stormed the election office and demanded to stay as observers. And there was a limit that was supposed to be inferred, and there they exceeded that limit by a lot. And they had to bring in armed guards to try to call the crowd. But
600 people got arrested in Minneapolis last night. It was an anti-Trump demonstration 2 hours south of me.
Yeah, well, how many doggone people can they put in holding tanks? Must be a massive...
Right. I guess some of them threw firecrackers at the cops. No, I have a friend who got drunk once and actually spit on the sidewalk, and the cop gave him a fourth-degree felony assault when he had gotten attacked in an alley, and he was walking, and he was all bloody, and he spit on the sidewalk, and the cop was questioning him, and they actually charged him for it. So these people got a fourth-degree felony assault for throwing firecrackers in the air by the cops.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But
well, Minneapolis has kind of become an epicenter of radicalness.
When did that happen?
And I'm from here. I'm from there.
Ah.
I'm from a suburb of Minneapolis, not Minneapolis itself.
When did that happen, the spitting incident?
With my friend or that... With my friend, it happened 2 summers ago. With the firecrackers in Minneapolis, it happened last night.
Right. No, I'm talking about your friend who spit on the ground.
It happened 2 summers ago, and he still has a fourth-degree felony assault on his record.
Right, and it depends on how close he spit to the cops, because that could be assault. I mean, it is assault.
Well, it was within 4 feet.
Right, well...
But that's not really the topic of the show, but now he can't get a decent job, let's put it that way.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get at, is that things like that are what needs to be changed. First of all, if he was spitting, let's say the footage should be down to 2 feet,
I actually have the police report in my hard drive. I saved it.
Yeah.
Anyone in the city of Duluth can ask for a police report on somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, no, they
but
can.
It's police officer's fault that he didn't have a job. You know, so.
Well, he had a job at Taco John's, and then he got $600 a week for COVID, plus regular unemployment, and he didn't want to go back to Taco John's, and now he wants to work in another fast food. I said, just go back to Taco John's. They like you there. So he's kind of being a baby, too, and he's in his early 50s, and he's really smart, and he has a degree in water biology, but unfortunately he hasn't made it too far in life because of his bad choices. So, well, I do start a new job myself tomorrow, and we're only going to stay on the air 30 more minutes tonight. So do you guys think no matter who wins, there's going to be violent outbreaks?
No.
Yeah.
I do, at least in certain parts of the country.
No.
Suzette, are you surprised that Biden won Virginia and it's almost tied in Georgia?
Well, I'm surprised because I actually had screen captured a video, and it was early evening. And the screen capture had showed Biden at 47 and Trump at 58 or 59, but then they called Virginia with those percentages, and they still, they only had less than 50% still to count, but they had called it for Biden. So, and it was showing up on the news broadcast. I was like, what's going on? So, yeah.
Yeah, 1 year that... 1 year Obama barely won Virginia. I remember that. So, yeah, I'm surprised, too, that I thought North Carolina, they have a pocket of liberals in the Research Triangle Park by Raleigh-Durham. And I thought North Carolina had a slim chance for Biden. But really, I didn't think Biden, it wasn't arrogant of me to say, but I didn't think Biden was even going to come close to the election because a lot of people think he's like too old and not coherent.
But not when you're up against a guy who is self-destructive as your president is. I have not seen somebody destroy themselves that much since me. So, as I said many years ago, I taught Trump everything he knows, but he's gone too far when he completely disregards a pandemic that now he's even had COVID and still is denying it. It's bad. You know, there are so many people in his entourage. Every doggone person that he deals with is in prison. And now, you know, so this is something that he has brought on himself. And so we don't need, you know, we don't need that kind of headache. It's like an alcoholic or an addict.
Right. And no matter how much a good job certain people think he's done, his reaction to this election is totally unacceptable. Like, just wait a few days and see what happens. You don't have to always be flapping your jaws and showing that somebody's trying to diss you or ruin it for you. Like, he has no faith in the system himself that he's supposedly defending.
Well, you could tell it in the debate. When he was debating, I don't even know if any of his facts were right. You know, he was just come off the cuff.
Well, you can go back and fact check debates.
Yes.
Right, but I mean, that was after.
And as far as the self-destructive, but he's done a lot of good, and that's why he has so many supporters. I mean, this is, there was a lot of enthusiasm for him in 2016, but nothing like we've seen this year, where we have grassroots people that are organizing, you know, vote parades and, you know, their own rallies without Trump being there across the nation. Not a part of the campaign whatsoever. You know, he doesn't stop in or anything like that. They're just people who were enthusiastic about his presidency because of the things that he's done for the country. So they were voting more on policy than they were on personality, because his personality, let's face it, it sucks. He's rude.
So
he's crude.
What about Trump appeals to you? Because, like, for example, in Minnesota, he came 2 days before he got COVID, or 1 day before he got COVID, he came here. And he said he's never coming back if Minnesota votes against him, and Minnesota did. So what about, with those kind of statements, what about Trump is it that you actually like?
Well, with those kind of statements, I would have to see it in context, you know, because there are a lot of things that the media takes and they make it as though it were serious and factual when it was obviously said in jest. Like Hillary's 30,000 emails in Russia. Hey, Putin, see if you can find those 30,000 emails type thing. It was a joke. And the media went, see, he's involved with Putin. See, he's a Putin puppet. Blah, blah, blah. It was like, oh, God. You know, oh,
where
he had 3 scoops of ice cream. Oh, my God, he asked for an extra scoop when everybody else only had 2. Oh, Lord, let's make a deal out of it, you know.
Yeah, I never really paid attention to that Putin puppet stuff.
Oh,
yeah.
I did. I did,
but
for sure.
One thing people forget, like John, and he's not on the show tonight, all he bitches about is Burisma and Hunter Biden, but remember that whole ordeal with Trump holding back aid to the Ukraine until he was trying to get that new president, Zelensky, to work for his reelection? Like, that's the reason he got impeached, even if it was inflated or not. Like, I don't know. I just think there's a lot of things on the fringe that people overreact to. Do you think
yeah.
he should have been impeached, Suzette?
No. I think if they were going to impeach him, then, you know, Joe Biden should be impeached for the same thing, because he actually had said that he interfered with another country. He told them if they weren't going to get rid of their prosecutor, that they weren't going to get any money. And son of a bitch. They fired him, so they were able to get their money. And so I was like, well, okay, I mean, that's another country, and you're telling them to fire their prosecutor. I don't think that we would take it very kindly if some other world leader told us to fire a prosecutor or fire anybody for that matter. It's like, who are you? But, you know, and the person said, well, it's the president that we deal with. And he said, go ahead, call him. So basically, you know, telling them that you're not going to get any money unless you do what we tell you to do. So, yeah, you know, all these things that get overlooked, but it's always Trump in the limelight. Now, just to get back to the COVID for a moment, at first when that COVID had broke out in China held back and they didn't tell us. Then the World Health Organization went in to go investigate. When they came out, they said it wasn't serious. Dr. Fauci even said it was like the flu. They have him on video saying so at the beginning. Trump
mm-hmm.
had listened to him. That's why he had come out and said it was like the flu. It will go away in no time. Basically, he was repeating everything that Fauci had said in the beginning. And so, you know, people say he's not listening to the science. He's not listening to the science. Well, if you go back to the beginning, you will hear Dr. Fauci say it's nothing to be concerned about. It's like the flu. And then after that, they figured out, oh, I guess it's not. All right, so we need to start doing something.
But some people it has effect lightly and others seriously. Like Trump got through it really fast, while other people who were like 48 died. Like I've heard stories on NPR about people who were in their 40s in pretty good athletic shape with no breathing problems die.
Mm-hmm.
Where is that?
Don't you think a lot of people panic, though, when, like, more than, like, up here, I think about 5 people in my county have died of COVID. But
okay.
I do think people are still panic-stricken by the illness.
Of course they are. My grandkids, my family we're COVID-free here in Nevada. And Nevada is one of the better states when it comes down to the numbers of people affected. We're growing like everybody else in terms of the numbers, but we, in general, are doing very, very well. We're a relatively rural state, so we don't have interactions like, except in Clark County. But COVID is something that the Chinese knew about, and they didn't. They wanted to get out in the public, in the populaces, populi. They basically did it because of Trump, and that's what people don't understand. They don't understand that, that the tariffs really started tearing China up, and they wanted revenge, and they had an opportunity. The
I don't know if I agree with that, but go ahead with your theory.
Yeah, the Wuhan Games. They had the World Championship.
It was
in Wuhan.
We mentioned that on our show. It was one or 2 months before the outbreak. It was a military game.
Yeah, it was the games, but the military was in attendance and things like that. So
there was
138
countries that attended or something like that.
Exactly. But what the tariffs did was derailed China's opportunity to really move quickly into the forefront of the world. So what they did was they just said, okay, we've got this, you know, weapon and, you know, germ warfare, and they put it on the world. So it's, but my point is that
I don't agree with that. I'm not that cynical. I think it was accidental.
Okay, you can accident your little panties off. The bottom line is that there was no reason for, you know, we've had the swine flu, we've had other things, minor pandemics, but this one was one of the worst strains of virus that we've ever seen, and the mutation right now is so that it's going to probably change where people who've already had it and who have the antibodies for this one are soon going to be susceptible to another, you know, flu. So, you know, this is my point is that they did it on purpose to spite Trump. And there are a lot of things that are going on, that have been going on, that we have gotten. We have, you know, who's paying for the wall? Our taxes are going up because we've got to pay for 400 miles of a cheap-ass fence that he's declaring as a wall. So, you know, this is, we've got to look to the source, the leader, the boss, and that's Trump. And he has done a great job. You know, he's done a great job of carrying this country apart. Our farmers have taken the brunt of all of this stuff.
Our farmers are doing well right now, as a matter of fact. Our farmers are doing really well right now.
Ones in Minnesota and Iowa lost a big chunk of their soybean market when China stopped buying in the beginning of the Trump administration.
That's what's happening, Suzette. They're doing well because prices are up.
Maybe California farmers are doing good.
No, they're not. I mean, they're doing okay. But it's because of prices going up because of lower supplies, exactly, instead of prices staying low because of a higher yield. So that's the that's the conundrum that the America or farming community is facing, is that, yes, they're able to make more money because their prices are higher, but they don't have to farm as hard and produce as much yield, and that is what causes prices to be lower. So, you know, there are good things and there are bad things to everything, and yes, the farmers are doing better than they were when the tariffs occurred, but they're still not at the points where they were, you know, a couple decades ago where they were making money hand over foot.
Mm-hmm. Well, I urge you to type into Google, China buys soybeans. because even CNN, for those who watch CNN, China is buying soybeans again. This is October 19th. But if you look it up, it would say, according to the agreement signed in January, China is committed to buying 12.5 billion of American agriculture goods in 2020 and another 19.5 billion in 2021. And China is the world's biggest importer of soybeans and importing 60% of the world's soybean exports. And that's according to CNBC. They don't like Trump. Why would they, you know?
That's a fact because the Brazilian, the Amazon and fires and things like that, they actually destroyed a lot of the soybeans coming from there. And Venezuelan from Brazil.
I didn't know Brazil produced soybeans.
Brazil, Venezuela is having their own economic problems. They produce soybeans there too. So, you know, there are a lot of places in the world that are having problems, and that allows us to have a larger customer base. But yes, That's true that our soybean sales with the contract, and we're also getting ready to sell beef back to Japan and China. We're in talks of that. You know, there are a lot of things that Donald Trump did very, very well, but there are a lot of things that we as Americans are bearing the brunt of the negative side of what he's done, and that that's the problem here.
That would make the farmers do well if they have to export soybeans and I guess corn and whatever else that they're China's buying right now and has a contract with. Far as the tariffs go, the tariffs were on other items not having to do with, you know, the agriculture area. So, you know,
tariffs were the soybeans. That was one of the first things he put a tariff on.
He put a tariff that prevented China from buying soybeans. I'll look it up while you guys are talking. We are going to end the show in 15 minutes because I have a job commitment tomorrow. I'm starting a new job.
Congratulations, I think.
Yes, congratulations.
Okay, sure.
So are you?
I'm starting two new jobs. Actually, I'm working at a Alzheimer nursing home, and I'm getting a $5 an hour raise. And I'm also working at a group home where people, like, they have a lot of physical needs.
Well, good
for
you.
Here's what I have to say. I heard a comment by Larry Elder, the talk show host from LA, saying something about COVID is the one that sabotaged Trump's reelection, like with all the states changing the ballot processes and the mail-in ballot. Do you guys agree with that?
Not necessarily. The mail-in and all the processes, he's done mail-in. Trump knows the system. What did it was, and COVID did change it, but it changed his rally pattern. And that was what really got to his base. So that's what COVID really did. But like I said, it was his fault because the Chinese were mad at him and wanted retribution. But yes, COVID changed it, but not for that reason. It was because of his ability to rally.
Well,
hey, I want to read something to you guys quick.
Okay.
This is from May of 2019, about a year ago. Soybean farmers in Minnesota are struggling amidst an escalating trade war with Trump and China, with no information from the feds as what will happen next. This month, long-term trade negotiations between the U.S. and China fell apart, with President Trump announcing additional taxes on 200 billion of Chinese imports. In turn, China responded with 60 billion in tariffs. The tariffs have impacted a variety of American goods like beer and swimsuits, but they've been practically brutal for one industry, the Minnesota soybean farmers. Minnesota is the third largest producer of soybeans in the country after Illinois and Iowa. In 2018, the state produced 389 million bushels of soybeans with a value of $3.328 billion. China has been the largest purchaser of U.S. soybean crop in recent years, which spells trouble for farmers. Well, I was just showing you, the only reason I brought this up is because this was written in 2019 and it's still relevant. So it sounds
okay,
like China and, yeah, they're punishing each other.
I was asking, did you look up for right now what's going on this year? And I think, what did I say I put in? China purchased.
No, I didn't.
So you'll get a whole bunch of new articles, updated articles that update that. But real quick, if I may, because this is kind of is like a bone with me that I pick as far as the whole Wuhan virus and how it started. You know, it was outside the People's Republic of China, and that's what the WHO says. That they noticed the first case that had come up, and this is coming from the WHO's website, which is a World Health Organization, and they had thought it was a pneumonia at first, and then it wasn't until January 9th that they determined that it was a novel coronavirus, and then on the 10th they had basically had a teleconference about on the novel coronavirus, and scientific advisory group of the outreach development blueprint, they call it a global strategy. But the director spoke with the head of the National Health Commission of the People's China Republic and also had a call to share information. So they were still keeping it quiet. The WHO had published a comprehensive guidance for countries to do as far as infection prevention and control. And so basically they have a list that says laboratory testing, national capacities, review tool, risk communication and community engagement, disease, commodity package, yada, yada. On the 11th, the WHO that had received the generic sequence of the virus from China, they had released that gene sequence so that way scientists can get busy looking at it to find a vaccine or a cure or whatever. Then they still did that on the 13th. On the 14th, they held a press conference and it stated, based on experience with respiratory pathogens, the potential for human-to-human transmission on the 41 confirmed cases in the People's China Republic existed. It is certainly possible that there is a limited human-to-human transmission. So at that point, January 14th, they still didn't know. So people are saying, well, Trump could have did something back in January. Well, the WHO didn't know anything and he was listening to them.
Trump was not.
And did you know since then,
Trump
has disenfranchised himself from the World Health Organization. We're no longer.
Exactly.
The U.S. is no longer like a primary member.
Right,
exactly.
But this has had the sequence, the timeline of what happened, and
so I believe what you said, and I think in the beginning nobody knew exactly what was going on. They thought it came from a Chinese wet market.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's one of the things. But you know, the Chinese scientist who was at, I believe it was, he was Canadian. He was I think, dual citizen Canadian. But he produced this a virus. And I believe it was Columbia University. But anyway, they had secretly hauled him back to China, back to Wuhan, and he could have developed that strain here, or at least in North America, and that's another. There are three prominent, reasons that they're saying that, or explanations about how it occurred and spread, and those are the three.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm thinking that it was actually produced man-made in a laboratory, sent out, to China, and they put it in the air at the Wuhan Games, and that was in like September. So we've
Well, they also had Chinese New Year. They had a big Wuhan. There was a big, I don't know, some type of party or dinner that they had. And they knew
they had a military game, games between 150 different countries Wuhan, China, including the U.S. and many countries from Europe.
Sure, absolutely. And so, you know, as far as China and it being man-made, I agree. I agree to the point of they manipulating the gene sequence in order for it to be transmitted human to human, because otherwise that type of virus typically would not transfer human to human.
Will die. It'll die.
Or even from animal to human. But they tweaked the gene sequence in there, and to where now that infectious disease from the bat can be transferable to humans and then passed to other humans.
Correct.
So I agree with you, Don, on that part.
Mm-hmm. Well, all I know is that
I don't know about if it's for tariffs or not. I think just China had a beef with us because we were no longer letting them manipulate the U.S. as far as taking their leftovers while they manipulated their currency. And so, you know, I just
well,
I think
that's the one half of it. The other half is that Chinese are trying to start a new central bank. They've been trying it for about 5 or 6 years now. And they wanted to open up their own central bank, and Trump knew that it was going to be, gosh, I said his name. Anyway, he knew it was going to be a real competitive central bank to the United States and the other central banks in the world. So he got it.
Oh, a while ago when they had China, BRICS was Brazil, Russia.
Right, exactly.
Africa, yeah. Oh, shoot, what's the other one? But
India. It was India.
Right, but BRICS, BRICS. Anyway,
right.
So yeah.
India,
and so
India was
the New Belt Road that they were running through Africa and so forth, and they were doing their thing. But
right.
As far as the banks go, they did open one, and they opened it up in Russia. That all the countries had to invest in order to do that. And they actually were supposed to be coming out with their new currency,
exactly.
Which would really disrupt the world as far as the economy goes and what currency is being used, because they wanted to dominate and squeeze out the American currency, the U.S.
Exactly.
dollar. So
mm-hmm.
I'm very up on
exactly.
it.
Geopolitics
is my thing.
Yeah,
everything outside the U.S. and how it affects
the
it.
Only reason they yeah the only reason they went to the Russians was because it was easier. They didn't want the pressure on the yuan in case it failed or the notoriety of the perception that China was going to take over.
Mm-hmm.
So they used
well,
Russia.
Well, they're still working it through the World Economic Health Forum, so you might want to check out that website, because China working with the UN and basically the World Economic Health Organization, and they're planning this big reset for the entire world, and they talk about it openly on their page. I mean,
right.
On ICLEI.org, which is the arm of the UN for the Agenda 2030, is actually electing, and are running an election right now, which there are a few U.S. mayors, U.S. governors that are actually running for that one world government Congress right now, which to me is treason. But their name is there, their face is there, and they make a statement on their page as far as that they're running for office.
What's the name of the organization?
ICLEI. ICLEI.org.
Okay.
So you got to go through there, and it'll say about us, and they talk about their Congress and all this other. But, Jane, we'll have to get together. I'll send you those links if you don't find what you're looking
yeah,
for.
Yeah, I'm going to give you my – I see your phone number, so
mm-hmm.
Can I text you my email?
Oh, yeah.
Is this your
please,
land
please.
Phone or your cell phone?
My cell phone.
And
I don't have a land phone.
It ends in 4-3.
Yes.
Is that your landline?
I'm sorry. I don't have a landline. I just have my cell phone, but please feel free to contact me anytime.
Okay, I'll text you my email, but I did want to mention one thing to you guys. I know that Trump tries hard, but I just, he's not my kind of person, let's just face it. But in July of this last year, he tried to formally, he notified Congress and the UN that he wants to formally withdraw from the World Health Organization. And it does not go in effect till July of 2021. So if he doesn't win the presidency, it's not going to happen.
Well, if it is an executive order, then probably Joe Biden will reverse it. If it was something that went through Congress that he signed, then they have to go through Congress to reverse it. But,
apparently, according to this article, it was the kind that Joe Biden could reverse.
Okay, yeah, well, then they have that right. Hopefully the courts won't give him a hard time like they did Trump when he tried to reverse some of his executive orders.
I know that when Trump first took office, he got out of a pan-Asian, I can't remember the name of the organization, but it was a pan-Asian organization that extended all the way from our coast to the Pacific something coalition that he got out of.
Mm-hmm. Well,
what
TPP
was it called again?
The TPP was what he was trying to
get. Right.
Yeah, the TPP
and, according
was
what he was trying to I remember he did pull out of that, and according to this article, Trump had to submit this to the UN Secretary General, so the UN is involved with this situation.
The UN is looking to be the police of the world, just like the World Bank is trying to be the bank of the world. That's the Trilateral Commission's ultimate goal, is to have one bank, one police, to patrol everything, and that's why I disagreed with TPP. Reading the law, reading the language, it has in there explicitly that the World Bank and UN will be banker and law officer of the world. And that was what scared me to death when I read the TPP, the legislation. So,
I agree.
That's one of the things, that should have been one of the first things that they see from Trump, was that at first, in fact, he was a proponent of TPP.
He hated it from the get-go because it was done all by lawyers. There's
right,
lots
well,
of lawyers.
Why do you say that, Don?
But no, he wanted to change the, he wanted to start changing some of the tariffs back then, some of the alliances back then for changing things like NAFTA and things like that. He had already expressed his dissatisfaction with him. So he thought at first that TPP was going to be possibly the panacea, but then quickly he changed his mind. Just like
he ran on taking us out of the PPP though. That was his part of his campaign, was taking it and people were like all for it. These things that he's done
that
on the world stage.
You guys can keep talking, but I'm going in the bathtub. So you decide when to end the show. And I'll make sure I put that in the remarks.
Okay.
Good night.
Okay.
Good night.
Don knows that I go into the tub halfway through.
That's right. I'll be doing the same thing over here. But, the same thing with Common Core. You know,
he wanted to get rid of that, too. Did you listen to any of his campaign speeches, Don? Seriously. Because Common Core, TPP, NAFTA, all those things were things that he campaigned on getting rid of, as well as the wall. It wasn't just the wall. If Joe Biden gets elected, Joe Biden is tied to and funded by companies or corporations that support sustainable development, which is what? Agenda 21. Agenda 2030, whatever they're calling it now. So
the thing is that not all Democrats agree with that. I didn't. I fought ever since Common Core was instituted. I fought against it. I agreed with, not Rush Limbaugh, who's the other conservative?
Mark.
No, not Mark. Not Mike Levine. the younger guy, energetic, always wore the
Ben Shapiro?
Wear glasses
oh.
off and off. He'd take his glasses off and on. He had he had one of the best exposés against Common Core that I mean it was intricate, involved, and Glenn Beck.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes. Okay.
And they were against Common Core, and I researched Common Core all the way to the core, and it was horrible. It was horrible when I first read it, and it's horrible now. Even though they had to get rid of it, many parts are still intact. That's the reason for the lack of education of our kids. Our people are stupid as hell. They're really, really dumb. And it's because the American educational system has led us astray. Our history is all wrong. It's extremely incomplete. The sciences are good, but they don't let the mind wander. If you're in the arts and sciences, you have to be creative. You have to be able to assume the next step.
You have to have an imagination that Common Core stifles, because they say there needs to be regiment. This. Don't think outside the box. But innovation comes from creativity, from imagination, from building regular wood blocks that kids play with, erector sets that they could, you know, make their own little cities or whatever they wanted to. But now, forget about it.
But that's
why I
get on the teachers. That's why the teachers. That's why I get on the teachers so much. Teachers should have taken charge instead of the union, which is all about money. The teachers themselves should have taken charge and said, we won't teach this stuff. Common Core math, which is still being taught, is one of the most horrible things anybody wants. You know, parents don't understand it. The kids understand it, but it's so much longer and more involved to do. You know, you can 2 + 2 = 4, not 2 + 12.
No,
12
plus
minus
1
2.
Plus 2, and then the 2 + -1 equals. I totally get it. It's like, crap! You can do this in 2 seconds or a second. What they're making you do here in 4 minutes.
Right. I mean, it's because you got to take the 12 and then take away the 10, and then and you know, include the 2 and. You're kind of like, but wait a minute. But the thing is that these things have to be changed, and there is not going to be a significant core change unless we get somebody. And I'm not saying Biden is, you know, the answer. But we've got to get somebody in there.
And Bill Gates is the one who started Common Core under Barack Obama. Trump is about school choice, and these school choice schools are popping up all over the place. And I'm not saying all of them are good, because there are
they're failing at an 85% clip.
According to who?
According to the figures. According to the schools themselves, they're going bankrupt left and right. And they're not. They're not. Taking any of the kids. You're coming up right now. You've got 7 or 8 mega charter schools, corporations that are running charter schools around the country. The other smaller ones are all failing. Not only in, you know, teachers aren't even getting paid in some of them. Mandatory furloughs, and I don't even know what's going on after COVID.
I'll have to look into that.
Yeah, because
I'm not saying I don't believe you. I just need to look into that more, because the last time I checked, it was actually before COVID, and they were doing very well, and the public ones. The private ones, you know, of course, were going to do well, because they picked and choose only a few, maybe one or two children through lottery to actually attend that school. But the public one that was paid for by the federal government actually spent money, and we're getting better, you know, as far as the students were learning more, and we're getting better results. Because the teachers could teach the way they wanted to teach as long as they basically had completed their math, you know, reading, English, whatever.
Well, and not include God. And not include God. But, you know, the public school system is being paid for by the public. And so these schools that allow particular kids, even though they're being paid by, you know, through tax dollar, that's where you're talking about school choice. And school choice in that context is not right. That's the problem with charter, public charter schools. If you want to send your school kids to school, you know, charter school, make them pay. And then take the public money out. And then you can have some kind of scholarship program to allow choice. But if you have the public school money commingling with private money, that's wrong.
Well, but to the extent that basically the money that that child would get for attending a general public school in his district, in his or her district, that money follows them to the charter school, and the charter school accepts whatever it is, because, of course, we know real estate and property taxes and so forth are going to increase the student's amount of money for that school, general public school, or decrease depending on what's being paid. But so the charter school, private, are obligated to take what that child is actually receiving for his education at a general. So it's not any more or any less coming out of your pocket. It's basically what it is. I mean, if that kid attends a general public school down the street from me, I'm still paying taxes for him or her to attend. And, you know, I don't have any school-age children, so I'm still paying for that child to go to school. And that's fine, because we want to educate our children so that way they can grow up and prosper and continue, you know, to keep this country moving. But, yeah, so it's I mean, what do you think about
but
that?
But that basically, and with charter schools, that basically is only about those that they deem are worth it. And that's where the scholarship money have to come from. You know, ideally, if it was a choice, you'd have every kid having the same opportunity. They'd have to have some kind of subsidy for the difference. But, you know, unfortunately, everything's not fair and it's not equal. And that's not the way that the actual system works. The system,
well, the
you know,
charter schools have a commitment with the parent, and that's where the worthiness comes in, because the parent has to commit. If the child wins the lottery to attend that school, and so their school years are paid for, the parents have to commit and sign a contract with that school saying, I will be there for my child as far as with homework, with teacher, parent, teacher, you know, all this involvement, because teachers will call the student in the evening. That's part of their job. That's why they have small classes, to make sure that child understood the homework for the evening. And if the parent understood, you know, so that the child can understand. It's a very tight-knit relationship. And if they can't keep that commitment, then they're expelled, because they need to have that commitment from the parent in order for the children to learn. And because it does no good to give a child homework if he doesn't understand it and the parent doesn't understand it. You know, so now you've got a lot of frustration. You got people who want to drop out or just frustrated and angry. And, you know, so that doesn't work. So the charter schools, whether they're public or they're corporate, have parents sign that commitment. And so when they fail to show up for a parent teacher or to participate in their child's education, of course, within reason, if it's a single working parent, but they do have to be active and show that they are involved in their child's education. Once they break that commitment, you know, you can't expect a school to continue the education, because the education just doesn't come from the school only. So we've dropped the ball a lot on that note, where we send our kids to school and say, okay, go learn. And so I don't have to teach them anything. School's teaching them. and they may not be learning, which we're finding out, you know, they're dumb as rocks. And so, you know, and I don't say that lightly. It's a sad thing because countries are bypassing us left and right. You know, we're at the bottom of the food chain when it comes to scholastics. I don't have to tell you that.
No, no, I remember, I'm from Wisconsin, and I remember two things about Milwaukee back in the day when I was growing up in the 60s and early 70s, that we had the number one in the country, park system and school system, public
mm-hmm.
school system.
Yeah.
And then when I left after college in 78, really, when I came back, it was so much different and so much more run down, and I couldn't believe the difference. So, you know, the bottom line is that I know the quality of a public school system, the system potential quality of a public
mm-hmm.
system, and it's so much different now because teachers refuse or don't teach well in neighborhoods that they don't think that they're worthy, that are worth it. And that's a big problem.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. I misunderstood you before. Do you remember when the teachers' union or teachers had unionized? Because I can't remember when, but and I know what you're talking about as far as the quality of education. I think my era was the last group because my sisters that followed me, I have three, just sharp decline. And, you know, at the same high school to where my parents had moved so they could attend, you know, a different school. But I guess I could look it up. But I'm wondering how big an effect that had on the quality of teachers that were being hired and kept. I'm sure, you know, it's significant, but I don't know.
I don't know. Where my family has come from, I grew up, you know, listening to people, seeing, you know, that, and seeing people like Jimmy Hoffa and people like that growing up, and they were mostly manufacturers, unions for manufacturing, things like that. Now, teachers' unions, I don't know, I don't think they grew until 50s or 60s probably. If you can look it up, that would be great. But the bottom line is that the teachers' unions are for the money for the unions. And, well, any union is actually for the money for the unions. And, for, you know, to help the teachers out or to communicate with the, you know, for fair play with the school systems, that's not what they're about. They're about the union and the money that they can make them unions to be more powerful. You know, a lot of these unions, the money goes straight into the union leaders' pockets. So,
yeah,
you know,
and then to campaigns, political campaigns.
Right, exactly. But the teachers themselves have to stand up. And I've been talking to teachers all the time. I'm a citizen lobbyist among the millions of other things that I do. And so I'm down at the legislature dealing with education problems as my second interest to labor. And for the most part, these unions needed to be changed, you know, reformed. But what your president did, you know, was a little, again, over the top. You know, making it mandatory or stopping the mandatory paying of dues by non-members. You know, that put...
the right to work. But
right.
That's a state-by-state thing, I thought. And it was
well,
taken to
right
the Supreme
to
Court.
Well,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Right to work is a lot different, a lot more than just that. Right to work is just, you know, an employer or an employee can terminate work with no reason.
It also prevents the union from having to collect from that person that's working the same job, and that's why the unions had such a big problem with it, because it's like, okay, we're negotiating benefits, but you're not paying dues, and you're still getting the same benefits that we negotiated for our paying members, so what's the deal?
Right. I can see a situation like that, but it's, you know, again, it's kind of like the churches. And this is a, you know, another subject. There's no reason why, under some certain circumstances, churches shouldn't be paying property taxes or other kind of, you know, not necessarily tithe taxes, but other kinds of taxes, depreciation, but just things like that. There shouldn't.
Doesn't that fall under freedom of practicing religion, though? The freedom of having the right to practice religion?
Not taxes. There's nothing,
the one for
about.
The American Federation of Teachers started in 1916. Wow.
Okay.
I had no idea. I don't think they should be involved in unions, the teachers at all, period. And that's because they're being paid with taxpayers' dollars. So basically they're bargaining with us, the people, because that money comes from the public, from our taxes.
But again, that's recent. The Department of Education was just kind of there to oversee education, not take over entire school districts and programs and making mandatory carte blanche blanket curriculum. That's not the reason.
Right.
The original reason, you know, that and now
right.
the Department of Education has all of those powers. And that's the 10th Amendment that says that anything that's not mentioned in the Constitution is up to the states. And that's why we have such a problem with maintaining or the ideological, philosophical concept of maintaining a Department of Education under the Constitution.
And for all the, you know, as far as Betsy DeVos doesn't need to be in that position, she's not qualified, but she did return the power to the states in order for them to be able to have, to choose school choice or to continue to do Common Core. Whatever the states wanted to do was up to the states. And then the states had a big fit saying, well, what are you going to do for us? What are we supposed to do with education? We canceled Common Core because we were expecting something else. So what do? And it's like, well, that's up to you guys. You decide. You're the states, and you have particular, you know, students or areas that you can do, you know, curriculum geared towards that or something else. Or it's you. It's all you. And that's the only good thing I think she did for the Department of Education on the federal level. Other than that, she just no. I'm sorry. She may be a nice lady and all that. But
no, she's not.
She does not belong there. So
she's
we agree
nice,
on that, too.
She's not a nice lady.
I don't know. That's why I said she may be a nice lady.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
But,
you guys are still talking?
Yeah, well, I'm almost done. The thing is that, you know, there are a lot of issues that need to be, you know, I don't know if you want to call it a conclusion, but we need to have leadership that brings us together, not tears us apart. And under these last 4 years, I haven't seen as many riots and marches and other, you know, violent acts as I've seen, you know, from both sides, as I've seen in the last 3 years. And that means
you have a short memory.
we had a terrorist attack
every month of Barack Obama's presidency. You can look that up. For every month of his presidency, we had a terror attack. That's where the Black Lives Matter pigs in the blanket started, with the Trayvon Martin and the other people. There were all types of riots, and boy, you have a short memory.
No. Those
were okay. Those were peaceful protests, right?
In the Trayvon Martin case, it wasn't even a cop. It was a wannabe cop.
Right, but the bottom line is that I don't know about the terrorist attack on U.S. soil?
Oh, yeah, here in San Bernardino. Did you forget about that
right.
couple? Then we
had, I mean, we had a lot.
Remember the ones in New York? Yeah.
Then we had the
Florida nightclub one with that gay club where the guys killed a lot of people there. Then we had one up in Northern California, towards Northern California, at that
right.
horse mm-hmm. bar or whatever it was. I mean, there
exactly.
were please look it up and you'll
Orlando.
Find out.
Well,
the Pulse
nightclub
in Orlando. And that one
right.
in San Bernardino was a foreigner who turned on his own employees. Him and his
mm-hmm,
wife.
But his wife came.
His
was
wife.
Radicalized over there and whatever that country
right.
was. But
right.
yeah, we haven't had any terror attacks under Trump.
No,
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong.
We've had riots. You didn't have riots. I'm from the 60s. I was born in the 50s. I was in the middle of the riots in the 60s, and that something like that hasn't happened very often since the 60s, like what's happening here in Portland and Minnesota, Minneapolis and Atlanta and places like that. We haven't had that kind of civil disobedience since the 60s. I mean, we've had, now, terrorist attacks are different. Terrorist attacks include school shootings and things like that. So those things are happening because people, are too complacent or they're privileged and think they can get away with anything, and that includes the cops. So, those are terrorist attacks are different than out-and-out street marches and rioting.
Okay. How about hands up, don't shoot, and I can't breathe, and these other ones. Baltimore burnt down,
Michigan. Terrorist attacks and marches are different.
But they still achieve the same goal. They still burn cities in Baltimore and in Michigan. And, I mean, just look it up. You may have forgotten. But
there's been
a while.
Bad things happening in Michigan from the right side, too, though. There were a militia group that tried to kidnap the Michigan governor.
Oh, they found out, actually, that it wasn't. He was actually anti-government, Jane. He turned out to be anti-government.
Well, it doesn't. No, it's not.
Okay.
Is that those are domestic terrorists, which are now on the near the top of the terrorism list, in the United States terrorist list. Domestic terrorism is almost at the top now.
Yeah.
So
I know.
And these are white supremacists. These aren't anything else but white men who have this.
They don't start with the white men stuff 5 minutes before
the
show.
Yeah, because we could say
on.
Black men shot that little boy in the head for no reason that lived next door to him. I mean, we could go back and forth, but let's not go there because all people can be violent.
Not tonight because we're ending the show in 4 minutes.
Right, and I'm just
and you promised me you'd
about.
Behave on that level, and John's not even here to excite you with it.
That's all right. I mean, I'm speaking truth. It doesn't matter. And if that guy shooting another black guy in the head does not mean it was a terrorist attack. That is
well, let's try
to jump
a little higher.
That's plain old violence.
That's domestic terrorism. That little boy couldn't even play in his front yard when that guy walked up to him. That black man
that
came
happen?
Out and shot him point blank.
No, that happened. That
why
happened.
Did he do it?
That
we
happens
don't know.
All the time. That happens all the time if the black boy.
It was a white
not...
little boy that he shot.
Oh, okay. Well, that's again, that's domestic terrorism by singular.
Oh, God.
Singular,
mm-hmm.
But that's a.
Hey, let's end the show on a happy note.
That's a black supremacist.
But it's not like a white cop coming up to a 12-year-old kid with a play gun and shooting him within a second and a half of getting out of his car. But anyway,
no, we just can't go outside our houses because we're afraid of black men coming up and, shooting us and taking our cars.
And one of the biggest things that,
now you sound like
biggest...
those white crackers in the Missouri suburbs that were at the Republican convention.
Okay, then.
I'm just trying to prove a point.
But
it happens on both sides, not just one.
Right. Well,
I know. I was just being tongue in cheek.
The biggest, one of the biggest jokes of Richard Pryor, I think, it's Richard Pryor, is that if he saw black guys on one side of the street and white guys on the other side of the street, and he was a white guy, he should run over to the black side because the white guys can do anything. And that was one of the funniest jokes I ever heard, because it's just true.
Like he was saying that he was safer on the white side.
No, he's safer on the black side. Black, you know, blacks are very generally, we're loving, we're party, we like to celebrate sex, drugs, and rock and roll as well. We care about.
That was in the 70s, dude.
But
yeah,
I wouldn't
be walking down any street in Baltimore, Detroit, Michigan, or any of those states over there. Even though I'm brown, I would worry.
Okay, just remember red light.
Because he's
just
in the crossfire, not aiming at me, just in the crossfire.
The only reason for that is redlining. If we can't get out of our cities, get it out of the ghettos, which are,
then vote for Joe Biden so he can bring more about it, because it was Democrats that brought that upon you.
Just overall, you guys, I want to make one last pitch. Biden is a nice guy. Besides the fact that he's getting old, he's pretty congenial. Now,
Biden,
I don't know what happened to his... I don't know how his son Hunter got so off track, being the fact that he was doted on so much as a child. But it was sad that the other kid died.
His dad
and his sister was hooked on drugs, and she was also a sex addict too, as well. So something went wrong.
Who was?
Yeah, the one with
the one
that Jill and Joe had together, right? They had one child together after they married.
Yeah.
Right.
What's wrong with being
that...
a sex addict? Just kidding.
I know. I'm asking her the same thing. I'm wondering the same thing.
I'm still dating the Colorado Republican, Suzette.
Who cares?
Are you really? Oh, my gosh, that's great.
Yeah,
oh my
and
gosh,
it'll be
funny.
2 years in January.
Congratulations. Right on.
And, Don, I might be coming to visit soon, but I'll keep you posted.
All right, you got it.
Okay, I'm giving you guys 1 minute each to... Can you do your...
Oh, go ahead.
Do you have a wedding anniversary?
On the 31st, we had it. Halloween, 20 years.
Right on.
Wow, that's great.
Congratulations.
Do you guys have kids?
Two boys, but they're fully grown and they have their own families. But, yep, just two boys.
Wow, that's great. John, how many years have you been married? Isn't it like 38?
37.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah,
congratulations.
So,
wow.
You bet. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's not the easiest thing in the world, especially pre and actual and then post-menopause. That shit sucks. And so, especially if a man has to go through it. Oh, my God. But,
that's true. So I apologize all the time to him. I'll snap at him, and I'm getting the sweats and whatever. I'm sorry. I didn't mean what I said. I'm sorry. I just.
Suzette,
I never went. I turned 60 this year, and I never went through menopause. I never had one hot flash.
Oh, my gosh. You're so lucky.
I didn't even have one hot flash.
You didn't have a hysterectomy or anything?
Nope. And I'm 60 years old, and I still don't need reading glasses or bifocals.
That's
I can
true.
Read perfectly.
Because you have all your estrogen, huh?
I don't know what
good
the reason
you.
Is. Okay, do you guys have
evening.
A final conclusion? Does somebody want to make a final statement?
I just want to say that God bless America, God bless us all, and just be tolerant of each other. We can all get along. I know that sounds so cliche. We don't have to get along. We can actually just like each other, but we got to live on this earth together. So make the best of it.
And since we're all, I think Suzette's a lot younger than us, but I want to save Social Security, and even if they do radicalize Obamacare into something else. I just hope it's doable.
There you go.
Because I'm getting up there in age and I need my health insurance. Okay, well.
You're one of the healthiest people I know.
I have a few flaws. Good night, Don, and good night, Suzette. We'll see you next time, hopefully.
Good
okay?
Night.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye.